This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week. It's been a short week since we had 4th of July. I do have the air conditioner on, so I will try to talk a bit louder. Summer is here. It's been a short week because we had the 4th of July, of course, and I was off for that, and so I could go in tomorrow and do some work, but I could also stay home and work on Grumpy Old Prophets, and I think I'm going to do that instead. I think I, you know, have enough, I can get enough hours in this month that it will be fine. We are sort of in betwixt projects anyways, and waiting for notification on another possible project, and so I'm not just stacked up slammed with work. And as long as I'm not just stacked up, slammed with work, then maybe I'll just go ahead and work on Grumpy Old Prophets. I have been working on Grumpy Old Prophets, too. I think we chatted last week about the fact that it was time to get back to writing and that I may be doing Audible audiobooks, but that I was really going to focus on writing because, as a writer, if you don't believe in your own stuff, how can you expect anyone else to ever believe in your stuff? So it's time to believe in my writing and just put away the rest of the silliness and just do what I started out doing just before I turned 50, which was get back to writing. And I've been enjoying it. It's good. It's good. I did get the panels in. I had mentioned my mock skepticism and disgust. I think I mentioned that last week over some suggestions that were made to me as to how to convert my hidey hole, my tornado shelter in my basement, into a sound isolation booth. And I was just going to wall it in with 2x4s and then put up really thick insulation. It's this 4-inch compressed stuff called mineral wool. I was just going to put that up all over the room and be done with it and have a good dead space. And I'd actually gone out and posted on a couple of boards and discussion boards. And the people out there said, yeah, that'll work, definitely. But you probably don't have to go that far. And so they said, basically, just get a panel behind you and on the sides and above and put in some base straps and you should be fine, even in a concrete room. And I thought, no way. No way. So my panels came in this week. I'd ordered 6 of them. So they came in. And I've got the wooden enclosures and stuff coming in a little later, and then I've got a little work to do to finish them up. But the panels came in, and I put them up, just laid them up, didn't secure them or anything, just laid them up against the wall, and lo and behold, if that doesn't seem to work. So, I am chagrined. It really does seem like all you have to do is knock down the primary and secondary reflections and put up some base straps and you're good to go. So, I'm pursuing that way, which should save me several hundred dollars, which is kind of nice. In other events this week, we currently have Charles McDonald staying with us for a little bit, which has been fun. He's the young man who got into the final rounds of the Folgers National Jingle Contest. I think I had mentioned that. He's in the process of moving to LA to hang out his shingle there, and he needed a place to stay for a little bit, and while he puts on the finishing touches and heads out there, and we told him, you're welcome to stay with us. So he is, he's staying with us for a couple of weeks. Sorry, I've got the hiccups. And that's been just fine. In other news, we did have a lovely, lovely dinner on Saturday night with the Duffields, Jeff and Sue Duffield. She's a singer, he's a pianist. They're both very, very good. She's also a comedian and does women's conferences and talks and they do shows and, you know, share the gospel, all that kind of good stuff. And they had been down in Branson for a week, working with the Southern Gospel people down in Branson. And so they were looking for a place to minister on Sunday. And for some reason, they got in touch with Glad Tidings, even though Glad Tidings is a little church. And my wife, Lynette, tried to find somebody else, a little larger church where they get a little better offering, and just nothing came together. So they said, no, we'll come. We'll come just for whatever. We'll come. I was like, okay. So, because the church that Lynette is currently doing the music ministry at is a fairly small church. So we went ahead and took them out Saturday night, kind of just as a way to say, let's bless you a little bit because you're doing a good missions work tomorrow. And had a chance, had supper with them Saturday night, and went to the Ruby Tuesdays, and just really had a wonderful time, just laughing and sharing stories and all that kind of good stuff. So it was fun. It was a lot of fun. At one point during the conversation, we actually started talking about, surprisingly enough, the voice of God in our lives, and flesh and spirit, and hearing God's voice and hearing his whispers in our lives. And we started talking about that, and I had mentioned my book, Still Whispers, and it was fun because Jeff was saying, yeah, my wife, you know, was always talking about that sort of thing, and he said, I've never, you know, never followed that much. He said, but in the last little bit here, I forget, he said months or years or something, that as he had started to notice that there was a recognizable voice within him that would say, you know, might be a good idea if you, you know, or, you know, you could think about doing such and such. I said, yeah, that sounds like him. And he said, I found that if I do what that little voice is telling me to, it works out pretty good. And if I don't, I wish I had a couple hours later. I said, yep, that sounds like him. And we got to telling stories about that. And then Sue Duffield told a story. And it was a fun, fun story. It was one of those stories like my story that I talk about in Still Whispers of, well, now, if you were a prophet, the kind of story that, you know, about the only thing you can say if you want to dispute it is to say, oh, you just made that up. That never happened. Because they're like things that come together that doesn't seem like there's much of a way possible that that would come together unless it was God. So the story was that they were traveling to a service, and she was sleeping. Sue Duffield was sleeping in the car. Hopefully I get the story right. I'll get the gist of it if I don't get it completely right. She was traveling. They were traveling in the car, and she was asleep, and she kind of startled awake because she heard a voice say, oh no, I just forgot the lady's name. Rats. Pray for Sandy. Sandy is what it was. She said she heard this voice say, pray for Sandy. And she said it was distinct enough that she actually looked around and asked her husband if the radio was on, or he said no. And so she thought, well, that was interesting. And so I think she went back to sleep and thought. And then another impression came, I think, that it was like Sandy's going to be at the service. And that's my phone going off. And just a second. I may need to pause this. One moment. Okay, that was my buddy that I was supposed to meet with tonight, and he had said no, he couldn't meet, and then I was wondering if that was going to be yes, I can meet, and I wanted to make sure that we were connected there. So anyways, she's driving along, riding along, and she hears this pray for Sandy, and then a little later on, Sandy's, you know, service, blah, blah, blah. So they get to the place, they set up their stuff, she's talking with the pastor at some point, and she asked the pastor, she said, do you know, is there a Sandy who attends church here? And the pastor said, well, there used to be, and they moved away, and I understood they were moving back, but I understand they had some difficulty, but I don't know if she's going to be here today. And she said, okay, that's fine. So during the service, she said she actually mentioned this. She said, you know, when we were coming here today, she said, I really felt impressed that I should pray for Sandy and that she would be here. And if you're here, I'd like to talk to you after the service. So did the service. She's working the table, I guess, in the back. And a woman walked up to her and she said, I'm Sandy. And so Sandy began to tell her story. And the story was that she was married to someone in the Navy, in the Admiralty, up high in the Navy. And so they had traveled all over the world. They had amassed all sorts of pictures and antiques and artifacts and things from all over the world. And they were moving. And they had hired some movers, and the movers came and packed up the entire truck, got all their stuff. And one of the movers, apparently, when they were closing the door, flicked a cigarette, and it didn't fall to the ground. It actually bounced into the truck. And so this truck is going down the highway, and things are smoldering inside, and eventually burst into flames, and just everything's gone. And so Sandy tells her this story, and of course, you know, Sue Duffield is just heartbroken for her. But Sandy tells her, you know, but everything's okay. Everything's okay. You know, God's been with us, and he's helping us through it, and we're good. And then Sandy said, here's the interesting thing. He said, God actually told me to pray for the singer that was going to be at our church today. She said, I didn't know who you were, but God laid you on my heart and said, pray for her. And as it turned out, during that time, Sue said that the Duffields were going through some financial difficulties, and it had kind of started to wear on Sue Duffield. And here's this woman standing in front of her who has just lost all of her worldly possessions, you know, the great value worldly possessions, who is saying, no, everything's okay, and God's actually told me to pray for you. And so it's really this wonderful moment of, you know, God orchestrating something from both ends at the same time. And I think Sandy made a comment about, you know, this was the way that God could get your attention to have you come talk to me so that you could have my story so that then I could turn around and pray for you. It's one of those really kind of cool voice of God things. So that's cool. Anyways, this past week, I'm a little short on time, but I think we can get through this. I've got about 5 more minutes before I get home, because I'm turning at Crystal Cave. I've been reading a book, had read a book, called Moonwalking with Einstein. And it is about the U.S. Memory Championships and the World Memory Championships, a journalist who had covered them and who then went on to compete in them. So it's a pretty interesting story. And it's about that, and it's about the larger role of memory in our lives. Because in the olden days, in the ancient olden days, everything was done by memory. Before there was writing, people would sit around and they'd tell the oral stories and they'd memorize the oral stories. And those stories then became a foundation for their lives. And when they were faced with a decision, they would recall the stories. And so the stories really became a foundation for ethics and behavior and character, all those types of things. William Bennett actually wrote a book, a primer, many years ago, where he had compiled all of these old tales that used to be told, these old morality tales that used to be told that people would remember and memorize and learn, and then through that they would know how to live lives. And in this book, he discusses the fact that with the advent of all these external storage systems for memory, that we no longer memorize that much, because we know we can just go pick up the stuff from anywhere we want to. And so when you have something like the memory trials, these guys are doing things that seem superhuman, like they are memorizing an entire deck of playing cards. They shuffle the deck, they start turning the cards over, they memorize the cards, all 52, get it done in under 2 minutes, and then someone hands them another deck of cards, and they flip those over, and then they arrange that deck of cards in exactly the same order as the first deck of cards. I mean, this is pretty amazing. You know, they have to memorize poetry at these contests. They have to memorize so many strings of numbers, of digits. And what's interesting is these guys, he said, when you go and talk to them, they say, no, we don't. Our memory isn't any better or worse than yours is. We just have average memories. We've just worked hard at it. And so in the book, he talks about the techniques that they use, and it's pretty interesting. And really what it comes down to in the final analysis is that it comes down to the fact that the brain is wired for location and for visual. And so the brain remembers locations very well, and it remembers images very well. And if you can translate whatever you're trying to remember into locations and images, you don't have any problem at all remembering. And remembering for long stretches of time. These aren't the type of memories that you're going to form and then 30 minutes later they're going to be gone. You can actually remember things for a really long, long time, which is very interesting. So one of the techniques that they use is a thing called person, action, object. So, for instance, one of the things you can do with this is you take all the numbers between 00 and 99, and by brute rote force of memory, this is the first step. You just have to by brute force, I'm getting my man, learn all the numbers from 00 to 99, and then associate with each of those pairings, 1, 2, 5, 8, 6, 9, 3, 4, associate with each of those pairings, 99 pairings, a person, object, person, action, and object. For instance, Bill Clinton smoking a cigar. George Bush kicking a can. And you want person, action, objects that are memorable, so that as soon as you see 23, that's Muammar Gaddafi, whatever, firing a missile, something. I don't know, whatever. I'm backing into my garage, so I'm going to start talking louder. Then what you do, once you do that, let's say that 1-2 is Muammar Gaddafi firing a missile, and the digits 3-4 is Bill Clinton smoking a cigar, and the digits 5-6 are George Bush kicking a can. So then to clump six digits together into one image, what you do is you take the person from the first pair of numbers, you take the action from the second pair of numbers, and then the object from the third pair of numbers. So first pair of numbers, the person is Muammar Gaddafi. Second pair of numbers, the action is smoking. And the third pair of numbers, the object is can. So Muammar Gaddafi smoking a can becomes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then what you do is you place that somewhere. So for instance, and the placement is the same through the whole thing. What you do is you find a memory palace in your mind. It can be anything, anything. So for instance, at one point, this guy's tutor was teaching him how to memorize his grocery list. And he said, all right, let's start with your house. Close your eyes. Think about the house you grew up in. And what we're going to do is we're going to take all the items on the grocery list and we're going to place them strategically in the house. So, for instance, on this grocery list, the first item was pickled garlic. Now, I read this days and days ago, and I'm going to remember these two items. I stopped after two, and I'll tell you why in a second. I stopped after two items, but I will remember these two items for a really, really long time to come. So, for instance, you take, and it's pickled garlic, so you make an image out of that. So one of those big jars of dill pickles that when you twist the top off it, they get that really pungent dill pickle smell. And then you imagine some pickles at the bottom of it and the rest of it filled up with garlic. So it's pickled garlic. And you imagine this big jar sitting inside your mailbox. So that when you open your mailbox, you smell that dill pickle smell and you smell the garlic smell. So now you're going to come around and you're going to start walking up your driveway. And in your driveway, you have to remember cottage cheese. Well, you aren't just going to put a thing of cottage cheese there. You're going to put like a little kiddie wading pool there. And you're going to fill it up with cottage cheese. And then to make it more memorable, and this is about the point where I went, okay, I'm not doing this. To make it more memorable, you put Claudia Schiffer in it, naked,